We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Dan Bernstein Show, 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
With the 39th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, Chicago Bears select DB from Washington, Kyler Gordon.
Kyler's been lighting up the last 2 days. I'll just tell you that. The guy's got tremendous ball skills. He's been playing the defense the right way, and we're very impressed with him.
Good. We want him lighting it up.
Light it up! Okay.
Quit yelling.
Sorry, my God. Adam Hoge covers the Bears for CHGO and the Hoge and Johns podcast, a longtime friend of the Score and one-time web editor, actually. He got the joy of editing stuff that I write. He is on the Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You can find him at Adam Hoge. So what are your initial impressions of Matt Eberflus now that he's actually talking about actually coaching the Bears?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Dan. I think it's still apprehension. You know, I still think that there's a lot that, and that's why I don't know what people thought of me asking about like captains already, but that's the kind of little stuff where you can learn about a coach, I feel like. And I didn't necessarily like that he didn't have a plan already for that, you know? And maybe he just didn't want to divulge it. But, you know, I still liked his follow-up, though, about the idea of, you know, how important leaders are and how they always rise to the top. As long as you actually have those guys on your roster, sure. So I think to answer your question, it's just still trying to figure all that out still. And I think there's moments where, I think I like his style of play that he wants to put out there. Like, I think I'm on board with that, despite, you know, some of the stuff with the hits principle that you and I have already discussed at length. I still think it can work, even if it's a little silly at times talking about the acronym. But yeah, some of this other stuff, like I just keep going back from learning lessons from past coaches and how we all thought everything was great with Matt Nagy and how quickly all that fell apart even after a year. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, even from a year from now, I'm not sure that I'll have 100% concrete answer to the question you just asked me.
Well, it's his answer regarding Justin Fields yesterday, and we played the sound yesterday of him just saying like Justin Fields is talking to people after the play, but he's doing it respectfully. And it just seemed like a interesting way of describing a second year pro quarterback. Like, that's your quarterback. And it just seemed that what was the tone of Fields's was important to him. The way Fields was doing it was important to him. So I'm trying to learn about Eberflus by what he's prioritizing. And it sounded like it mattered to him how he was talking to his teammates. I'm like, get out of his way, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a similar thing happened with, how people read into an answer about Jalen Johnson compared to his answer about Jaquan Brisker, which he like lit up as soon as, you know, Brisker's name came up. But I tend to think that was just because Brisker had a great day of practice, and he did. You know, we were out there and able to see that. And then some people thought, like, oh, well, he's sending a message to Jalen Johnson. And he very well might be. I think we're still trying to figure out sort of the nuances of, you know, when he's trying to send a message to a guy, or because we just haven't had enough conversations with him yet, if that makes sense, to really sort of read a tone into what a coach is saying. And that becomes part of our jobs. That becomes actually pretty important, but it takes a little bit more time. I hope that makes sense. But
yeah, it does.
It's a feeling out process is what I'm saying.
It does. And any of us who has been on a beat and any of us who's there every day with a coach knows how those relationships develop. And what I found interesting was Matt Nagy, and I don't want to bring everything back to Nagy, but that's the most recent example that a lot of people have. He was unfailingly civil. You know, he could be a cool guy and be nice about it and call people by name and say, and sound like he was answering something. Like, yeah, I respect the question. I appreciate the question, you know, Steve or whatever. But then never answer anything. And he got good at sounding like he was answering something without doing it. And I think that may be a coaching skill. I don't know if Eberflus has that desire or the wherewithal. And maybe that's going to be a little refreshing that a good football question is going to get a good football answer.
Yeah, and, you know, that's an important point, too, because what you just said is true, that, like, Matt Nagy sort of evolved through the 4 years of how he was answering questions. And I think that these first-time head coaches go through that process. Remember, this is the first time that they're really having to talk to the media as much as they do. And when the season starts, it's every day. Or even when training camp starts, it's every day. When you're a coordinator, you talk once a week. So you have some experience of talking to the media, but it's not an everyday thing where you're what you say the day before can impact what you say the next day. Or you might have a follow-up to something you said the day before that people didn't like. Things like that. Whereas when you're a coordinator, it goes away because you played another game and now there's a whole new
right.
cycle of questions
right.
that come through. And so I think that it's, as much as I'm saying it's a feeling out process for us trying to figure out Matt Eberflus, he's same thing. He's doing that with us. And I think he's been a little bit guarded. And I thought that there was a couple things. One was when he started talking about Brisker the other day. The other was actually that question about leadership that I asked him that he got, I felt like kind of passionate about, a little fired up about for the first time, that we haven't really seen that side of him yet.
But I thought the question, too, about the practice skirmish, and Mark Grody asked that question about and his zero tolerance for on-field stupidity. Now, I know from talking to people that came from George McCaskey from the moment they sat down and started vetting coaches, that what helped get Eberflus the job was the word discipline and professionalism. And this is a team that was fed up with dumbass penalties and fed up with guys not listening. And that's yet another thing that I think only goes so far. That I think it's great to have that as a baseline. Like, but this is the damn NFL. Like, part of me thinks, yeah, that sounds good. Let's not be stupid anymore. And then I think that is a very basic presumption. Like, you shouldn't even have to talk about that. The fact that the substitute teacher has to come in and be like, well, we're going to do things differently when I'm here, and this is how things are going to work here. Like, okay, that's great, but now what? Like, that is a really minimal thing to be focused on here, just not taking dumb penalties and not getting off track because you're not focused.
Well, and I agree that question had to be asked because we did see a really small minor skirmish. That really wasn't that big of a deal, but it was our first opportunity to kind of say, okay, what do you think about this? I'm just at the point where I don't really care what the coach says because Matt Nagy said all that too, you know, that he wasn't going to tolerate it and anything like that. It wasn't going to, you know, and then on the field, there was, it never manifested. And you had instances where you had players punching another player and they weren't really held accountable. And then it came back to hurt you in a playoff game against the New Orleans Saints because you kind of set the tone that, yeah, you're saying it's not acceptable, but then nothing happened to the person who did it. And that even goes back a few years because we saw, was it Javon Wims again in that incident? Yep. Someone hit Prince Amukamara in the head in a practice that I'm thinking of.
Ah.
And that was your first opportunity to address it then, and it didn't really, obviously whatever message you were trying to get across didn't get across to your players because then it led to stupid penalties in game. So I hope that what Matt Eberflus said, and he did get fired up in that answer too, is how it actually will be with his actions and how these players are disciplined when stuff like that happens. Because the one thing I've learned, Dan, and you know this too, that stuff is going to happen no matter what your expectations are in training camp practices. You have to minimize it then so that it doesn't come back to hurt you with a penalty flag or worse, an ejection in a game. And there was one point last season where, like, how many of those did the Bears have? It was like 5 or 6 and multiple ejections, and you're just going, there's no discipline on this team.
Is Robert Quinn there?
No. No.
Does that matter?
I think in his specific case, no. In nine cases out of 10, I usually am the person who says it does matter. I also think that it's important that the players have their rights, that they bargain and all that. That's fine. But at the end of the day, this is your full-time job. And when you're trying to put together a football team, I also believe that you should show up. But there are very limited cases where I think it's okay. And Robert Quinn's one of those guys. An additional point on, and the reason why I'm saying this is because not only just is he a veteran, and when he says he knows how to take care of his body, he obviously does. But I also think the fact that they're transitioning from a 3-4 defense to a 4-3, even though it is a new defense, and most of these guys need to be in here to learn this new defense, for him, I think it actually makes his job easier. I think he knows exactly what to do. He's had most of his success in his career in a 4-3. He's going to be in an even better position, in my opinion, just to put his hand on the ground and get after the quarterback. So in his specific case, I don't think it matters. Last year, when a huge chunk of the defense didn't show up, why do you think they had those blown coverages in Week 1 against the Rams? Why do you think you had guys not touching guys down? I think that that added up and became a problem. But in this specific case with Robert Quinn, I think he'll be all right.
Is Ryan Poles on the field?
Yeah, we see him out there. Yeah. Yeah. And not just him, but Ian Cunningham too, Jeff King, Trent Koziel, the new guy that they brought in from Kansas City. They're all out there during practice.
I just wonder, because that tells you something, to see the involvement of where, you know, is he standing, arms folded, well off to the side observing? Is he talking to coaches? Is he yucking it up and grab-assing with everybody? I mean, because we have no idea. These dynamics are all new, these behaviors, and they've never done it before. So maybe he's going to try out some behaviors and see what feels right.
No, it's interesting you asked me that question because I'll relay you an observation that Adam Johns, my podcast partner, had that he brought up on our show yesterday that I didn't see. He saw this, but he noticed that Poles was not only out there, which we've seen him out there, but he spent, I'll just say, like an extra amount of time, in an abnormal amount of time, specifically focused on the offensive linemen in their individual drills. And you know, not just kind of standing there with his arms crossed, say I'm out here to practice, but like really getting close to what was going on and observing what they were doing. So I keep going back to the offensive line because that's the one area where everyone feels like they need to do more, and certainly they can do more. I'm just, if there's one position group that I'm willing to give the new guy the benefit of the doubt, it is the offensive line, because he knows he played O-line. He that's his position group. And we go back to Ryan Pace. For all Ryan Pace's faults, he had good defensive lines pretty much every year. His best free agent signing was probably Akeem Hicks. He consistently drafted well on the defensive line in later rounds, and he played defensive line. So I'm willing to give Ryan Poles the benefit of the doubt of that he's looking for something very specific in terms of body shape, movement skills, attitude, and that even though they haven't gone out and made a huge splash on the O-line, that there's this possibility it can still be better as a starting point in 2022 than it has been just based on those qualities that he's looking for.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword, though. If you're as a general manager, my belief is let your work speak for itself. And if after the fact you have developed an ability to scout a certain position or a certain positional group, let your results say that. Because if before you've even played a game, all of a sudden, like, you're the O-line, that, like, if you can't do it, it just makes it worse. I think there's more downside than upside. And Poles has done that. I mean, Poles has said, I'm an offensive line guy, or that's how I look at the game, it's how I start. It's an interesting choice on his part to already sort of brand himself that or plant that flag, because, look, you're the head of the Chicago Bears. Like, you got to be in charge of everything. You got to know the long snapper, and you got to know the special teams gunner, and have an eye on all of that medium term, long term, and all of it. So I think you got to be pretty careful getting too close to the coaching side. But that's just me.
Yeah, no, I was talking more about just the observing the talent on the field. Like, I'm not saying he's getting involved in, you know, how they're being coached up. I just think that you know, it's almost like Madden when you're like building a player, you know, looking at those traits that he's trying to find. But I get what you're saying. I'm okay with this sort of patient approach, though, of looking at these guys with your own eyes. Like, based on some conversations I've had, like, I think that that's very important to these talent evaluators in the front office right now, in that, okay, yeah, they can look at all the tape. But I think there's also a recognition that the tape only tells some of the story from the last couple of years, especially on offense, because things were so messed up schematically that in some cases the tape isn't necessarily completely fair to the players, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were being asked to do things they either shouldn't have been able to do or weren't coached up in or didn't know how to do, that they need to get them, even if it's just on the practice field with no pads on. Unfortunately, those are the rules right now. That they need to get them in this scheme and coached up by these coaches that they believe in. And that could be a double-edged sword too, because what if you hired the wrong coaches? You know, but that's all you have right now to go off of, is what I'm saying. And I do think that right now, when I talk about the front office members that are out there, that's why they're looking so intently, because I feel like, yes, they have the tape evaluation. I'm not sure they believe the tape evaluation fully, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I get that. And that should be good due diligence to try to cross-check everything in that way. Adam Hogue, thanks, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
That is Adam Hogue. Next up, a man who knows offensive line play like you would not believe. You know it if you follow him on Twitter, at Brandon Thorne NFL, and a lot of his breakdowns. We're going to get his thoughts on this Bears offensive line next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
so fired up that our GM is a former offensive lineman, because I think he gets it to the core what it takes to build an offensive line. And it's tough competition, smart guys who love football and like just want to compete. I can't think of a better scenario, even for me as a veteran, having so many young guys that they see different things or they're asking me questions. And I got to be even more on top of my game and what I know mentally. And I have to be right. All around, there's a ton of great things.
That's Lucas Patrick. Sounds like he's going to be a go-to for reporters talking about the Bears and the offensive line. And as a former reporter, I will tell you that when you think the team's probably going to be bad, you better find that guy that you know you can talk to after losses. Who's the stand-up guy who's going to be there and be able to answer honest questions with honest answers? For me, it was often Big Cat Williams was that dude, and maybe it's going to end up being Lucas Patrick on this team. We have been trying to get this guy on the air for a while now. Brandon Thorne, the author of the Trench Warfare newsletter, offensive and defensive line analyst for Establish the Run. You can find him on Twitter at Brandon Thorne NFL. You can hear him now on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports. But Brandon, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
I'm looking at this Bears offensive line depth chart, and I'm not feeling all that good about it. It's a lot of names, and we know a lot of these positions can move around. The fun of it is are the variables right now, because we have no idea who's going to play where or why they're going to play there or what the mix is going to be. Before we dig into some of the granular stuff, first blush, how good is this group of guys and what's the upside?
Yeah, well, you know, I typically rank every offensive line going into the year for Establish the Run around July. So I haven't gotten to that point yet where I can really kind of rank them league-wide, but just, you know, just kind of looking at the depth chart as well and just kind of thinking of other teams and kind of what the top, you know, units look like and some of the bottom. They're definitely closer to the bottom, you know, that's for sure. That's not to say there isn't some, you know, upside here, some solid players. You know, I think that Lucas Patrick, Cody Whitehair, you know, are both pretty solid starters. You know, maybe some upside with Tevin Jenkins, you know, at right tackle, if that's where he plays. And then other than those three positions, I think, you know, right guard, left tackle, assuming Jenkins is at right, those two are pretty much, you know, I think up in the air. And then the depth behind those guys is very much up in the air. You know, it's just, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, I mean, you know, with the new coaching staff, new regime, all that kind of stuff, you know, kind of starting from the ground floor, you know, could be worse, but definitely a lot more questions than answers, I think, that's for sure.
How much does handedness matter in the modern NFL? The strong side, right hand, still left guard needs to be more athletic than right guard, left tackle protector of the right-handed quarterback's blind side. Are all these things that we grew up with still true?
Not as much, I don't think. No, there is still some validity to some of that. I think it's more so, you know, relevant when you're talking about the individual player's comfort level. Typically, switching sides is a pretty tall task for a lot of guys. There is some guys that can do it easier than others. But, you know, for the most part, I would say it's a little bit easier generally to move, say, from left tackle to left guard as opposed to left tackle to right tackle, just because you're only kicking inside one position and you're using kind of the same sides of your body to, you know, initiate movement, plant, redirect, stuff like that. When you switch sides, all that kind of flips on its head. So, you know, it becomes a little bit of a challenge. You need time to kind of iron those things out. Some guys do it quicker than others. But, you know, I think generally, you know, you look at the contract situation in the NFL among offensive linemen, left tackle is still substantially higher paid than right tackle. And I think some of that, you know, blind side protecting of a right-handed quarterback still holds true. And then the right tackle typically needs to be a little bit bigger with a little bit better anchor to kind of keep rushers out of the quarterback's face if he's right-handed. So I think that's where it comes from, and still some of that is true. However, now pass rushers are almost equally split on both sides in terms of quality. So, you know, you guys know this. Khalil Mack rushed over the right tackle predominantly, you know, with Chicago, Oakland, and now, you know, in L.A. he's going to probably do the same. He switches sides. Most rushers switch sides. But Joey Bosa, a lot of high-quality rushers rush over the right tackle. So that's why it isn't quite as important as it used to be where, you know, primarily the speed, high-quality rusher was a right end rushing over the left tackle. Now it's both sides.
We were listening to some analysis of what the run game is expected to be, and the presumption was there's going to be outside zone. There's going to be, you know, the Alex Gibbs style sort of belly cutback stretch, stick your foot in the ground, one cut stuff. But we were warned off of that by somebody who said, not really. If you look at what Luke Getsy's offenses and the with which he's been associated have done, and he says maybe there are some duos scheming, but it's more of an at-you run game. How do you reconcile Poles' desire for thinner, more athletic, lighter offensive lines if it is going to be a straightforward at-you run game? How does that work together when we usually presumed that lighter, more athletic meant that outside belly move before hitting up there up the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think ideally you want a little bit of both. You know, there's very rarely do we see any scheme in the NFL that's, you know, heavily in one direction. I mean, sometimes – a few years ago, you know, maybe with the Rams under McVay, but even them, they've kind of become a little bit more multiple. Kyle Shanahan's become more multiple. So teams generally, I think, want to be more multiple, you know, because you're more unpredictable. So, but, you know, just looking at a lot of Packer film over the years, watching, you know, like a guy like Elgton Jenkins, I've seen every snap of his career. And, you know, they're pretty multiple in Green Bay. I mean, it's zone-based. That's kind of the, you know, the bones of the scheme or the foundation, I would say. But you could get to a lot of other things. And there's different ways to run zone, too. I mean, you know, like, for instance, on the front side, you know, you could try to really hook and reach guys where you utilize more quickness, or you could try to kind of widen guys and use kind of more of that leverage and power to kind of displace guys laterally. So there's different ways to kind of run outside, inside zone, wide zone, tight zone, however you want to label it. So yeah, there's just a lot of variance, but in terms of wanting to get more athletic and lighter, you know, it makes sense, because zone is going to kind of be the foundation. But you know, it's, you know, that gets, I think, a little bit overstated too, because even though you may get a little lighter, the whole entire NFL and all the NFL offensive lines are lighter and more athletic now than they were, you know, 10 years ago or whatever, even further than that. So, you know, it's maybe just, if anything, becoming a little bit more modern, and trying to, you know, kind of fit in with the rest of the league a little bit more, you know, generally speaking. And I, you know, it to me, it just makes sense. It's nothing too, you know, out of, you know, unexpected or anything like that. It's kind of standard.
One of the themes that we've been watching here with this entirely new regime here in year two of Justin Fields has been the extent to which they're going to work to make their young quarterback's life easier, to make things comfortable for him. And it's hard to tell from what they've said about how much that matters. And then we look at who they draft and where and what they prioritize, and have their top two picks be these, you know, defensive players. It said something, the way they've spent their money. As we watch what they do in practice and how they configure the offensive line, what should we be seeing to begin to draw conclusions for how they may be tailoring it or not to Justin Fields?
I mean, generally, you look across the league with young quarterbacks and how they make them comfortable. You know, the run game obviously being effective when needed. It doesn't need to be built on the run game necessarily, but you want a potent, efficient run game, you know, that you can kind of work play action off of, even though you don't necessarily need a run game for play action to be effective. I think over time, you know, it just helps. You know, to kind of, you know, keep linebackers and, you know, the middle of the defense honest, to kind of respect the, you know, the play action fake. So, you know, kind of an efficient run game. I think play action usage is important, just to kind of create that hesitation in defenses for a second. That's helpful. That's more effective under center as well, as opposed to shotgun, although it kind of works in shotgun a little bit as well. But under center, play action pass is very effective, I think, still. And you see that, with kind of a lot of different systems here and there. But I think, primarily the NFL's in gun now. But you could still do, play action or RPO, which is a little bit different. So RPO play action both kind of create that split second hesitation in defenses and kind of can open up windows, manipulate the defense, create easier looks for the quarterback. So I would imagine that's going to be a pretty significant part of the offense. Green Bay incorporated a lot of that. So RPO play action for sure. If you play sound, effective defense, that's going to help, the other side of the ball and vice versa, So, if you're able to do that, of course, that helps, quarterback helps an offense, just like a good offense helps the defense. So, the fact that they didn't invest in receiver, like everyone thought that they, would have or should have, is a little surprising, but, that to me is going to make it interesting for how they approach this scheme wise, because I think they're going to have to overcome some of the lack of personnel in weapons with scheme. And that's going to be on the offensive coordinator. And it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Last question for you, Brandon. I hate to use the metaphor of stock investment in our current environment, but if you were buying stock in either, it had to be one of the two, in either Larry Borum or Tevin Jenkins, who would it be and why?
I'd buy stock in Tevin Jenkins just because of coming out. He was a better player in college. Last year is kind of hard to judge them against each other, apples to apples, just because of kind of the context around, Borum being able to, come in, practice, prepare for the season, play, and then, play throughout the year. Whereas Jenkins, had the back surgery, came back late, didn't look quite like himself, maybe wasn't in, obviously wasn't in as good of a shape, as he could have been, having a full off season, things like that. So, but I did full evaluations on them coming out of college, Oklahoma State, Missouri for each of those guys. And I was very high on Tevin Jenkins coming out. And that was predominantly because of his size, his power, and his competitive toughness, just being a physical kind of rugged presence. I didn't see him being necessarily an ideal fit for a zone heavy scheme, but if it is more multiple, I think that that will, lend itself well to his skill set. But yeah, man, I think his power, coupled with his size and kind of his demeanor, that all to me kind of, is something that he kind of hang his hat on, and utilize as kind of a nice, framework for development while he kind of cleans up his hands and the timing of his hands and his footwork and things like that, which I think, just still, continued to need work. But he just has more to offer physically than a guy like Borum. To me, I think Borum's more limited in what he can do. I saw Borum as kind of more of a backup interior kind of guy. So that's how I saw them coming out. And based on what I saw of, Borum last year and the little of Jenkins, not much has changed, honestly. So, yeah, I'd definitely buy stock in Jenkins still. And, I just think his ceiling is higher. Borum's ceiling is just more capped. And, so that's why I would go with Jenkins.
That is a very thorough and appreciated answer. Brandon Thorne, thanks much for your time. I'm glad we finally tracked you down. I hope we can talk again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That's Brandon Thorne, the author of the Trench Warfare newsletter, offensive line and defensive line analyst for Establish the Run, and he does offensive line draft scouting for Bleacher Report. The Midday Midway is coming up. I've just got a quick story on something absolutely hilarious that hackers have created to bother Russia. And we always hear about Russian hackers bothering us and Russian hackers bothering everybody. Little taste of their own medicine here, and it's delicious. Also, oh my God, Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, this is insane. And after 11, we have the sound as good as you think it is. It's better. It is an absolute execution of one of the most powerful people in sports. I mean, it is. And I think, oh, fine, Bernstein, whatever, nice tease. No. You trust me, you're not going to be disappointed. Don't go anywhere. You have the score.
first half or the second half. You know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score.
What a day already. We started out just sort of lamenting where the White Sox are and how there's nothing we can do about it and everything is horrible. And they went from having one of the highest walk rates in all of baseball last year to having the worst walk rate in all of baseball and having the worst defensive runs above average in all
Go
of
White
baseball.
Sox.
And it's just kind of bad. And you'd obviously fire the manager. Obviously, a normal team in a normal situation. This has every box to check. Should we fire the manager? Yeah. Is he the reason for everything? No. But it's what you do. There's nothing else to do. You're going to start getting rid of players and benching players. You got nobody else to call up. When a team is underperforming like this with very, very high expectations, what is done in baseball at this point is you fire the manager and you let somebody else have another look at it and try to do something because they seem miserable. And everything feels miserable. And we're projecting it on them and they reflect it back at us. And it's just clear that there's some disconnect in the clubhouse too. All this, everything else that's going on. And they're out there in the clubhouse, and Tony is sitting in his coach's office farting and watching Tucker Carlson talk about replacement theory. And it's just not a healthy situation. Any normal team, any team that actually cared about what was going on would fire the manager, and they're not going to, and that sucks. We also talked Bears with Adam Hoge. Talked Bears offensive line specifically with Brandon Thorne. A hacktivist group calling itself Obfuscated Dreams of Scheherazade. And if you know the story of, I think it's 1001 Tales, Scheherazade was the daughter of the vizier who held off her own execution at the hands of a vindictive king by telling stories and stories to no end, eventually thousands and thousands of stories. And she would stop in the middle of the night, and instead of beheading her at dawn, the king would wait and say, well, I want to hear the next story. And eventually he fell in love with her and made her the queen. Well, this hacktivist group has created a bot that sets up a conference call between multiple government entities, causing each to think the other one made the call. The stated purpose is to waste the government's time and tie up the phone lines. The automated spam calls go on nonstop during Russian operating hours. They have attacked government websites. On Wednesday, the hacking group set up this site. Anybody can initiate and listen in on one of the calls. The website is called Waste Russian Time Today. Users visiting the site can scroll down to the telephone icon, start a call between random Russian agencies, and listen to the chaos as they try to figure out who is calling whom and why. Obviously, knowing Russian might help understand what is said. Yes, thank you, TechSpot. Still, participants likely get heated as the officials have probably been fielding nonsense calls all day. Anger and frustration sound the same in any language. Regardless of whether anybody uses the site, the bot still places calls without human intervention to ensure it wastes as much of Russian agencies' time as possible. The group said, if you're on the phone, you can't drop bombs or coordinate soldiers. Said, you don't speak Russian, block the lines. You can always guess something from the voices, and the more Duma employees are irritated, the better. So far, 5,186 calls have been placed from the website since going live. The group operates off the phone numbers of thousands of government employees, including Vladimir Putin's press corps, Duma employees, military police, and the FSB Russian Secret Service. The numbers range from mid-level administrators to high-ranking politicians, but the group wants more. Obfuscated Dreams of Scheherazade is looking for ways to add to its database. The hackers will accept emails from anybody who might have more phone numbers. They encourage those who'd like to be more involved to do independent research to build a more extensive collection. Users initiating the call are entirely anonymous. Their voices cannot be heard. Muting the third-party user ensures they can't give up any identifying information to the others on the line. Now, whether this effort's effective in slowing down the war machine is debatable. It's unclear what Russia can do about the distraction. And the fact that the nuisance calls come from trusted official sources make it even more complicated to weed them out. So, again, it is called Obfuscated Dreams of Scheherazade, and the name of the website is Waste Russian Time Today. So I haven't checked it out yet, but see if you can and entertain yourself and have some fun with it. That is the Midday Midway, and oh my God, Jimbo Fisher. Oh my God. So next segment, we're going to play a couple minutes of Nick Saban, and then what Jimbo Fisher did about 45 minutes ago at a public press conference in response. I don't love college football. I love college football chaos. You are too. That's next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.